Good morning, friends. Good morning and welcome. I'm so glad to have you here with us today with me and Lou. Right, Lou?
That's right. We're wrapping up chapter 5 today.
Yeah, last three verses of chapter 5, verse 27, 28, which gives us a little bit of a teaser on meditation. And then verse 29, where he sort of closes chapter 5. But chapter 6 is about meditation, which is what everything has been culminating and progressing towards. It's like coming to a waterfall, right?
Yeah. You know,
the river is racing down from the mountain, and then it's coming towards this waterfall. It comes rushing towards this waterfall, and then boom, goes over. So that's what we're going to see in chapter 6. And I said last time that I'm going to be sitting outside on the deck to enjoy nature.
Yes.
And part of the reason, problem with that is the train that goes by.
That's right.
Every so often. But fortunately, these days with coronavirus, the train schedules are a lot less. So, you know, I often wonder myself why everything in the Gita is brilliantly done. And it's not, there's no wastage of any kind. Words are very sparse and succinct because it's not handwritten, it was spoken. So I often wondered why in chapter 5, verse 27 and 28 are like teasers of meditation. I mean, if Krishna wanted to do this and teach us about meditation, he would just do chapter 6.
Yeah.
Why would he start with verse 24? 7 and 28 and tell us a little bit about it, but not fully, which he will do in chapter 6. But anyway, if any of you know the answer, let me know.
I have a guess.
What's that?
I have a guess from someone who's tried to meditate in the past over years or trying to find the art of meditation in it. If you just try to jump into the pool cold and try to meditate without a basis for it, without understanding what you're trying to accomplish, without understanding what you're dealing with, it gets frustrating and it's ultimately defeating. You just give up on it because you're terribly frustrated by it. Because if you don't have the basic knowledge, is you're not supposed to think about anything while you're meditating, and that's not true at all. You need a basic understanding to sit down and attempt this, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's what the whole five chapters so far have been, is to get you to the point of meditation and to be successful at it. What I was referring to, though, is that when you read verse 27 and 28, he basically starts on it by saying, you know, keep your breath the same going in, the same going out, focus your mind on a point between your two eyebrows, and then just drops it right there.
Yeah.
Whereas he goes back to that in chapter 6, explains it more in detail, and then says how to meditate, how to breathe, how, where to look, and stuff. And so I didn't understand why 27 and 28 would just be thrown out there small little thing and then not complete the whole technique. If you notice, by the time I finish 27 and 28, you'll see that he didn't really teach us how to meditate. So what was this doing there? That I didn't understand. But anyway, you make up your minds, friends, as you listen to this. So verse 27 says, shut out the sparsha, which are the contacts, the sense organs. Shut out the contacts. Sparsha means all objects which are touched by our four sense organs. So it could be sound, could be smell, could be taste, all of these. Shut out the contacts. Fix the gaze, your gaze, instead of looking, you close your eyes, fix the eyes and the gaze in the middle of the two eyebrows, right here, where the pineal gland is, and make the incoming and outgoing breaths equal, so that the breathing in and going out is equal. And then that's 27. And 28 says, having taken moksha as the supreme goal, and having controlled your senses and your mind and your intellect, desire, anger, fear, he is always free. So he said this all along, except there's a slight difference here. He said all along that we have to have self-realization as our ultimate goal, and you have to have control of your senses and your mind and your intellect and your desires, and by doing that, you become free. So verse 28, we've dealt with many, many times in the last five chapters. Something new here is where he says, having shut out the contacts, fixing the gaze in the middle of the two eyebrows and making the incoming and outgoing breaths equal. That's new. We never heard that until now.
Right.
So here he says, fixing the gaze in the middle of the two eyebrows. In chapter 6, you will see that he says, fixing the gaze on the tip of the nose, or the end of the nose, or the beginning of the nose. So a lot of people wonder why over here he says the eyebrows, between the two eyebrows, and then over there he says the end of the nose or the beginning of the nose. Some people interpret that it's the same spot, that here he said beginning of middle of the two eyebrows, but when he says the beginning of the nose, he doesn't mean this tip, but he means the tip between the two eyebrows.
Right.
Be that as it may, it makes sense. A lot of people have said that when you're looking down, your thoughts go down. When you're looking straight ahead, there's aggression, there's love, there's whatever. But when you look up, there's a different emotion, one of gratitude, one of devotion that comes. That's one way of looking at it, that you're looking up with your eyes closed, your eyes are merged together like you're cross-eyed, mm-hmm. and you're looking into the center of the thing, and that helps when you meditate. I can tell you that from personal experience, that makes a huge difference in how you feel, as opposed to just closing your eyes and looking straight ahead. Not every person that teaches you how to meditate speaks of that. Did you hear this before, Luke, to keep your eyes in the center?
No, I haven't, but what you just talked about how your mood and your body follows your gaze makes perfect sense, because we're basically predators. So you're looking ahead. If you're looking straight ahead, aggression is happening. If you're looking up, that's a whole different mindset.
It puts you a whole different mindset.
Yeah,
right.
It makes perfect sense.
So the details of how to meditate we'll see in chapter 6. But here it says, keep your eyes closed. Remember, we've talked about this before, that your sense organs are all shut off by doing meditation except for two. Your eyes are closed, your mouth is closed, so your tongue can't taste anything, you're not touching anything, your hands are to yourself, but your nostrils are open and your ears are open. So here, if your ears keep thinking, pots and pans going on in the kitchen, wonder what my wife is making for dinner.
Right.
And then you say, I can smell something. Yes, that is my favorite. It's going to disturb your meditation. So he will describe to you in chapter 6 that you've got to find a place that is away from all these distractions. And that is one reason why people who are serious meditators go into areas where there's nobody there, no disturbance. Why Christ? Why Buddha? Why Krishna? Why Moses? All went away for 12. I don't know why the year 12. 12 years they went away to meditate, 12, 13, 14. So your nose is open, your nostrils are open, your ears are open, but everything else is closed. But those two are still open. Our eyes are very sensitive, as we've talked about before, and our thoughts follow wherever the eyes go, and they see something and vice versa. Wherever the thoughts go, the eyes go looking for something, and the mind follows. Looking up, you're looking at the future, you're looking at God, and it helps to still the mind. The intellect is a questioner and constantly questions everything it looks at, and the mind is a believer and a feeler, one that has emotions. So in this, have to have complete control over your mind and your senses, and don't allow your mind. When you cut out the sense organs from the mind says, I can't smell anything. I can't smell coffee. I can't smell food. So then the mind says, my stomach is hungry.
Yeah.
What did I enjoy last time? I wonder if my wife is going to make that for dinner, right? So it starts going there. Memories of the past, thoughts of the future, instead of being in the present. So what you will learn is meditation is a way of falling asleep, but won't make sleep come to you. That needs to be explained. You can prepare yourself to sleep, but you cannot make sleep come. You can make your bed nicely, you can have the right pillow, you can have the right mattress, the right temperature, you can put the right sheets on, silk sheets, pull up a comforter, all of that. And then you lay down. Now what? How does the sleep come? You cannot make the sleep come. Sleep has to come on its own. You can only do the preparation.
Right.
If you can use that same analogy towards meditation, then you understand what I'm saying. You can make all the preparations, you can find a nice seat, you can find the right spot, you can get away from distractions and you don't smell anything, you don't hear anything, you're away in the loneliness, wilderness, wherever, and then you can close your eyes, but you cannot, you have to learn how to control your mind and your senses. But beyond that, meditation, your awareness of your own Atman will come in and of itself, by itself, come rushing to you, is what they've said. I haven't experienced it. But just like sleep comes to you. Right. If somebody says, well, how do you sleep? I don't know. Tell me how to get sleep. I don't sleep at night. Tell me how to sleep. Nobody can. Right. Nobody can explain how to make sleep come. Nobody can explain how to meditate to get to the Atman. But they can only tell you it will happen. So that's verse 28, 27 and 28, about just a little teaser about meditation, right? You didn't learn how to meditate, as you will in verse chapter 6. You didn't learn anything, but it's a teaser. And if you can tell me why Krishna decided to put it in chapter 5 in those, let me know. Verse 29 says, and this is the last verse for chapter 5, says, knowing me, with a capital N, knowing me, the yogi attains eternal peace. I, with the capital I, am the enjoyer of sacrifices and austerities. When me is used by a self-realized person, such as Krishna, Buddha, Christ, when me is used, that me refers to the Atman or Brahman. Buddha, Krishna, Christ, whenever they spoke of I or me, they were no longer talking about the person that they were born as, but they're talking about now their enlightened self, which is Atman. Can you imagine Atman, Brahman, speaking to you?
Yeah.
I mean, if I ever saw a self-realized person talking to me, this whole Atman, Brahman, is talking to me through the voice of this person. Incredible. I just can't imagine it. But he says, I am the enjoyer of sacrifices. What does he mean? Doesn't mean animal sacrifice, okay? A lot of people misunderstood this and they started sacrificing animals and things like that. He means yajna. You remember?
Yes.
I don't remember what episode it was, what chapter or verse it was, but we talked a lot about yajna, which is a service of, a spirit of service and sacrifice, a spirit of service and sacrifice for the benefit of the whole community, where you're not talking about yourself. That is the sacrifice that Krishna is talking about here. He says, I am the enjoyer. I enjoy it. When people, you come to me, you want to come to get self-realization, you can come to me because I enjoy sacrifice. Meaning, if you do service and sacrifice, as in a yajna, you will end up coming to me. I become more close to you because you've become close to me. And I am the enjoyer of austerities. Austerities here means tapas. Tapas, Lu, is not referring to the little plates that you get in a Spanish bar.
Yeah.
That's tapas. Delicious, by the way. But here, tapas means meditation, austerity, and study. Here he's saying, I enjoy conserving your energy in the form of tapas and directing it to a higher purpose to achieve the self. That is tapas. I enjoy it. He says, Krishna says, which means not I like it, so I'm going to bless you and you're going to get all the, which means that as you do more austerity, as you do more tapas, you come closer to me. You come closer to me because of your efforts, not because I like you, therefore I'm pulling you. I like your hair. I like your face.
Right.
No, I like the austerity. I like the self-service. I like the sacrifice, and therefore you're going to come closer to me. He also says that basically you have to have an ideal in order, and that's why you meditate by looking up. You're looking up for an ideal. An ideal can be absolute, which is I want to get to the Atman, or it could be limited. I want to do benefit for the world in general. I want to help people. That's a limited ideal, but it's still a good ideal. Service and sacrifice in a limited ideal or in an absolute ideal is the way for you to reach the Atman. And with that, friends, that is the conclusion of chapter 5. I hope you enjoyed it. I am excited about chapter 6. I hope you are too. And it's a long one. This was only like 29 verses. that is about 40 plus verses in chapter 6.
Mainly
so
talking
we'll see
about,
you next time.
Mainly
Sorry,
talking
Luke?
About meditation?
Not mainly talking about meditation, but revolves around meditation. A lot of it is meditation, how to meditate. It is the best guide you can get on meditation. A lot of classes, a lot of teachings, mm-hmm. but this is the original. This is the Upanishads and the Gita are the original teachers and literature on meditation. Can't go back beyond this.
The best way to contact us is on Gita Memoirs of a Psychiatrist on Facebook, but you can also get the audio-only versions of these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. But if you want to communicate with us, come on over to the Facebook page, give us a like, and say hi, and tell us what you're thinking about what we're doing.
Thank you so much, Lou. And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.